Welcome to the Guitar Channel. I am super happy to welcome you a new Zoom interview. It seems that we are doing more and more of this nowadays. So I am very happy to have on the other side of the Zoom connection, the one and only Ben Jonsson. Ben, how are you doing today?
Yeah, I'm doing pretty well. Yeah.
All right. I need to thank Jeff McCarlane because he's the one who introduced you to me. So thank you very much, Jeff, in case you are watching this. So, Ben, tell me, what was your very first guitar?
The very first guitar I owned was just a $30 guitar from like a little store you know, where the strings were sort of a meter off the guitar neck.
Of course, yeah.
it's a good place to start, you know. I thought it was really painful to play like an open C chord on it, but I was right, it was. it was tough, you know. It actually got easier from there on, I think, because I got the next guitar I got a couple of years later was an electric guitar, you know, sort of a $100 Strat knockoff, and that was a big step up. So,
and what was the
where it all began?
What was the initial inspiration to pick up the guitar?
You know, I was not necessarily drawn to the guitar immediately. I knew of the guitar. I had sort of heard great guitar players in my parents' record and tape collection at home, you know. And I'd have to say that what it eventually came down to was I was about 9 years old, and I remember finding a tape of, like a cassette tape of Jeff Beck, you know, Blow by Blow.
Not bad.
And I also had heard for many years in the house George Benson.
Okay.
Growing up, which was, to me, there was... That, in fact, George Benson's guitar sound is the first sort of guitar sound that I remember hearing. To me, that's sort of what a guitar sounds like.
You know? Not bad.
From my earliest memory.
Yeah, it's good to start. It's a good start, indeed. That's for sure.
And that was a great start. Yeah. So those guys really.
And do you remember the very first guitar riff you were able to play an instrument, and can you play it?
Oh, sure. Yeah, it was. Let's see if I can do it any justice. Maybe, maybe not. But you know, that's what the first one was, you know. Once I figured that out, I was pretty happy with myself.
Okay, that's cool. And if you summarize, what are the main turning points in your career? What is your training? What are the main influences? How did you become the guitar player you are at the moment?
I'm not sure. It's been quite a journey. I'd say that in terms of influences, I mean... You know, I started playing guitar when I was 10 years old, and I heard those two guitarists that I mentioned to you. But from then on, I was very much a fan of Steely Dan.
Okay.
I loved listening to Steely Dan, and I sort of was therefore introduced to all the great guitar players that were on those albums, like, you know, people like Steve Kahn. I listened to a lot. Of course, Larry Carlton, Denny Diaz was a guitarist who doesn't get mentioned much, who I really loved. But then I discovered Pat Metheny after that. And for me, that was sort of the turning point where I thought, okay, well, this is really it. I heard Pat's playing and his music, and that was the turning point for me personally, where I said, okay, I have to try and do this.
Mm-hmm. You were born in Australia, correct?
I was, yeah.
Okay.
I was, yeah.
What is it like in Australia? Is Australia a guitar country? We all know, of course, across the world, Tommy Emmanuel. Is he some kind of looming figure above all the guitar players? What is it, in fact, growing up in Australia as a guitar player?
Well,
I mean,
Tommy Emmanuel is, you know, one of the greatest guitar players on earth. Undeniably, you know, for me, I love Tommy Emmanuel's playing. It was sort of someone that I think was, you just couldn't miss him growing up in Australia in the 90s,
yes.
As a child. Yeah, he was on TV seemingly every week, you know, once a week at least. sort of. So I think that that subconsciously must have had an impact on me, because it just, he played so effortlessly on TV when I was a child that it just, he made it look like fun.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously made it sound great. But I think undeniably there's probably a bit of that influence in the back of my mind that I saw him so young that he's fantastic. There are a lot of great guitar players that come out of Australia, funnily enough. I was sort of fortunate to have a great guitar mentor in Melbourne, Australia, when I was a teenager, called Peter Petrucci, who's a jazz guitar player in Australia, and he's fantastic. And there are a lot of great players who come out of Australia, and I'm fortunate to have grown up around a lot of people who I could look up to.
Mm-hmm. And what was your training process? Are you mainly self-taught, or did you have many mentors, as you just mentioned?
I went to what we say in the United States, a performing arts high school, you know, mm-hmm. like a music high school. And I got, I guess you'd say, a scholarship to that school when I was 15. And that was the real turning point for me, where I was like, well, I really have to take this seriously now. You know, I got in because I guess I had jammed away in my bedroom enough pretending I was John Scofield or whatever, you know. And I guess that got me good enough to get into this performing arts high school at the time. And then I thought, okay, well, I really have to be very, very serious now. And then I sort of, that program at the high school continued into like a college program when I was 18. And after that, I just took a chance on sending an audition tape off to New England Conservatory in Boston.
Okay.
And that was just I didn't expect anything from it. I just thought, let's see what happens.
Mm-hmm.
And they gave me a great scholarship. And I, put me on a fantastic path. It was really because of that I got to come to the United States and have the life in music that I've gotten to have so far.
Mm-hmm. So we're going to talk in a second about your two albums. There is one called Autumn, which was released in 2015, another one more recently called Ace. But mm-hmm. first you have to tell me, so now you are based in the US. Mm-hmm. What is the impact of the pandemic on your life as a musician?
It has changed things a lot, I think, without question.
Yeah, I suppose, yeah.
It's changed things a lot.
Big surprise.
big surprise, right. Look, I haven't played with any other people in about a year now, which is a very unusual occurrence. This time last year, I was taking a very rare break from playing with people in January last year. And, so I wasn't really playing with anyone. I was a little burnt out. I had just finished putting out an album. I had been on quite a few tours in 2019, playing with some other people, which was great. But I was tired. So I thought, okay, I'm going to take most of January 2020 off. And little did I know that I'm still doing that a year later. No, I'm just kidding. No, I am. Basically, what happened then was sort of as February 2020 rolled around, things started becoming more obvious that this was a serious situation in the world. And my calendar of gigs for the year started evaporating, mm-hmm. started disappearing. And that was strange.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, wow, this, what's going to happen? And basically, I think that happened to everyone, really. And, in the interest of containing this illness, it's probably for the best, but it was a change.
Mm-hmm. So most of your work pre-pandemic was as a gigging musician?
Correct.
Yeah. Okay. So how did you adapt? Do you do, remote teaching, Skype lessons, stuff like that, or compose all day long? Or
Things changed a little bit for me. The The biggest blow to me was losing a year's worth of live performance and touring. I was really looking forward to that. And I think it's also necessary to sort of acknowledge that that is how I, it's a large part of how I make a living.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that that's, I am a working musician. I think that that's got to be part of the discussion, right? So I was in a very fortunate position to be able to put a lot of my work into the online realm and make a sort of sustainable living off playing online, doing webinars online, all that sort of stuff. And okay. Also having a wonderful response from people who actually wanted to learn with me and all that sort of stuff. And which was fantastic. It actually ended up being a whole lot of fun in a realm that I just never experienced or worked in before, you know, doing the, meeting with people on Zoom and a big change, but I enjoyed it. I think it was actually a great sense of community emerged
mm-hmm.
In a really tough time. So it was cool.
Yeah. And do you do also a remote session for people? I don't know. And does people send you stuff and then you record on them on tracks?
Funnily enough, that didn't change. That was exactly the same. You know, the only difference was that maybe once in a while I might have gone into an actual studio.
Yeah, okay.
to play on something that I didn't do that when the virus hit. But now everything's remote. I've gotten much better at recording myself mm-hmm. at home and got some better equipment as well. And it's been a period of adaptation to this new time that I'm a bit of an optimist. So I try to see the positive side in even the most difficult time. And I think it's worked out pretty well, you know, all things considered.
And you are based in the around or in the New York City area? Right?
Yeah, in Brooklyn. Yeah.
Okay, in Brooklyn. So we have this idea of New York City being like the top of the world of the musician, especially jazz musician and so on. Is that, or was that the case before the pandemic? Now we know that there is no gig anymore. So what about that?
Well, for me, New York was just sort of, it was sort of like a dream come true, you know, and I think it will come back. I think it's just going to come back a bit different. You know, New York is very resilient. It's been through tough times mm-hmm. many times before I ever came along. And I've lived in New York sort of coming up on 10 years, which is surprising. For me, it's surprising. It's how time flies. But it became an opportunity to play with people I'd grown up listening to on recordings. And also sort of get be the recipient of frank discussion
mm-hmm.
about what I needed to work on, especially right when I got to New York, you know, things I needed to work on in my playing. And I can remember numerous conversations of that sort. And I loved it. I loved it. It's been just a constant process of growth and getting to play with people I grew up listening to. And there's just nothing like it.
And is there some kind of competition between players? You should work on that. Or no, this guy is not good. He's another crazy Australian guy. We don't want to play with him. So what's the atmosphere?
Well, the last thing you said is definitely true.
Okay.
No, I... I'm that guy. No, look, it's there's always an element of competition, you know, especially when... I think it's sort of like everyone experiences this after you stay in New York long enough. There's another generation of people coming up behind you, you know, mm-hmm. sort of trying to, it's a bit like, you know, just ready to play. But you know what? I think it's healthy competition. I think it keeps you in check in a way. It keeps you it keeps you, your work ethic in order.
Mm.
Just when you get a little too comfortable, you realize that you like everyone else, need to keep at it, keep working. You know.
Cool. Let's.
So I think
Let's talk about your music. So to prepare for the interview, I listened to what I found on Spotify, mainly Autumn, which was released in 2015, and then Ace, which was released in 2019. And I was surprised to hear the tone difference on Autumn. It is more jazz, when Ace is definitely more fusion. So was that a conscious decision to move away from jazz and go more into a fusion style of music?
Yeah, it's just sort of how I felt. It's a great question. So I was Autumn was the first time I ever got to record anything, and I was 24 at the time, and I sort of had amassed a set of compositions from the previous like 5 or 6 years, and I thought that those were the four strongest pieces of music, and so I. At the insistence or on the advice of Sean Whalen, the piano player on that recording, who I was playing with a lot at the time, at the 55 Bar mostly in New York, he said to me, well, you should record some of these things. I think it's about time you put out a record of some sort. And I had been hesitant to do so because I think at that point in 2014 when I recorded it, I actually do think a lot has changed since then, because I sort of thought, should I put it out on some kind of label? But labels sort of seem to be disappearing, record labels, and becoming less of a thing. And I didn't know what to do. But Sean said, look, I have a sort of an independent label that I've put my albums and other people's albums on. Let's just put it out on that. You need to put something out. So that was the initial stage. And then we went out to a little recording studio in New Jersey in the middle of a blizzard, and it was really almost got canceled, you know, huge snowstorm. But we did it, and we got it done in 4 hours, and that was that.
Wow, that's fast. I thought you
it
were
was
about
really
to,
fast.
I thought you were about to say 4 days, but no, it was 4 hours. Okay.
it was four, maybe five, because we just to... factoring in listening back to things, but I'd say 4 hours of playing. We sort of just played straight through it. And that was it. And we put it out the next year, and in 2015. And yeah, there you go. And then you asked about the difference between the tone and the conscious choice. You know, yeah, I think a bit of time had passed, and I had sort of had a lot more musical experiences, a lot of new musical experiences. And since I had put that recording out, been called for such a wide variety of musical work, you know, I'd done some session work, some pop session work, playing distorted guitars and stuff, and I enjoyed that. And I toured the world a few times with Terry Lynn Carrington and her band, which I loved doing. And we played such a breadth of music in that band, you know, a stylistic breadth of music that absolutely had an impact on that album. So that had a big impact.
Can you pick a song on Autumn and walk us through your composition process? Maybe play what was the initial idea for the song and how it evolved, you know, into the final song?
Sure. Well, I could remember the first track, Lonely City, which I really think was... I don't really go back and listen to myself that much, you know, because I sort of can't bear to. But I remember, what was I going to say? I think it's an accurate picture of where I was at that time in terms of playing and writing, you know. I mean, yeah, and I wrote that on piano.
Okay.
And honestly, it started off with sort of a bass line, you know, the chords are... you know, sort of like that. And thinking about how can I put in interesting sort of tritone movement between this chord progression. How can I sort of make that consonant by having a bass note where I go from this E minor chord to sort of... down to a B flat and utilizing whatever sort of common tones I can and that sort of stuff. And yeah, and all sorts of chordal movement that really depends on the bass line. I just wrote the bass line first. I don't know why. It's just how it happened. And I wrote it on piano, and the rest unfolded. It was definitely influenced by probably Kenny Wheeler. I love Kenny Wheeler's compositions. Was listening to a lot of him and Dave Holland's writing at the time. And that had a big, you know, respectively, of course. And that had a big impact on that sort of thing. And yeah, and mm-hmm. it just unfolded from there.
And how do you know that the song is ready to be recorded?
Well, that is part of the paradox of the recording process itself. You have a pretty good idea when it's ready to be recorded, but to some extent you need to play it a lot and maybe even record it to be sure that you have something.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't, we actually recorded one extra song on that session, but it just wasn't ready. So I guess that exemplifies what you're talking about. So yeah, I think we just tried it and it was ready. And a couple of the other songs, that was the newest song out of the four that ended up on that record. So yeah, that was the one that sort of had a question mark over it at the time. But the other three I had had lying around for a few years, so I was pretty sure they were okay.
Mm-hmm. What about Ace, so, which was released in 2019? So the composition process was about the same, or how did you work on that album?
Well, it was an interesting one because Ace was more collaborative. You know, it was sort of the initial stage of that group was sort of a three-way joint trio between myself and the bass player Alex Claffey and the drummer Kush Aberdeen. And I like it because it's the same bass player and drummer who were on Autumn, but all of a sudden it's sort of the volume's gone up to 11, so to speak.
Yeah, you know? Indeed, yes.
And I think I just, in terms of the compositional process, those two guys, I think, contributed a tune each, which was cool. And I arranged their tunes, and most of the rest of it was written by me, if not certainly all arranged by me. And I just sort of felt as though that's where my head was at in that moment in time. I wrote the songs in a sort of more like a song-like fashion. I wrote them all on guitar. I didn't write anything on piano on that album, which was strange, honestly. Most of anything I write is on piano.
Mm-hmm. Why is that? You don't feel an inspiration to write? It's more to improvise on the guitar and write on the piano?
Maybe actually. You know, I think the piano is in some sense maybe a more logical instrument. Not to disparage the guitar at all. Of course, the guitar has its own inherent logic. But I think that purely for the fact that it's laid out and you can see an octave, and then you can see the next octave, and then you can see the next octave, and there's only one place to play each note, and that probably is a little more logical. I'm certainly not a virtuoso piano player, but I can play a piano, and I sort of don't get as distracted on piano because I just can see everything laid out nicely.
Mm-hmm. There is a song called Ace of Hearts on the album where you have a very Eric Johnson kind of tone in the solo. Is he an influence on you? You know, very violin-like on this song.
Yeah, I'd never really listened to Eric Johnson. I think he's a wonderful guitar player who I found out about much later.
Okay.
And I listened to him in more recent years because people from time to time would say, hey, that reminds me a bit of Eric Johnson. And I thought, I'm not the first, really check him out.
Okay.
yeah. And it's much the same with people mentioning Alan Holdsworth. I just didn't grow up listening to him at all. And he's another person I came to appreciate but would not say is an influence on me, really. Again, I'd say the same about Eric Johnson. You know, it's tough because sometimes people think I'm sort of making a disparaging remark by saying that, but it's not at all the case. It's just there were certain people who were on my radar as a listener and certain people who were not, you know.
Mm-hmm. Can you play the guitar part you are most proud of on the record?
On Ace?
Yeah.
Well, let me think. I haven't played it in a while, so I would have to think. I mean, honestly, the bit that I like the most is right at the beginning, which is sort of this little thing I came up with. Which is this little, I guess, melodic idea, sort of melodic idea, which is on this song Shadow in the Sky, which is the first track. And I like it because it's a sort of an augmented scale, but it's just voiced with these chords, which go between F minor and E minor. So it's sort of also utilizing some sidestepping or side slipping, depending on how you like to refer to it, you know. That's sort of F minor, E minor. Where are we? E minor, F minor again, F minor, E minor. Sort of going between those two keys, and we used that little riff to cue sections, to cue improvised sections on that song. I really like that song because it's so raw. It's just mostly improvised. The three of us just improvising, cued with that little riff,
mm-hmm.
or melody, or whatever you want to call it.
How was it to cover 'Cause We've Ended as Lovers, which is a very, it is a Stevie Wonder song, right? And I think the most famous version is the one, the cover is the one from Jeff Beck. So how did you come up with the idea to cover this song?
That was suggested by my co-producer, Michael Perez Cisneros, who you might know his name from recordings by Kurt Rosenwinkel, Gilad Hexelman, and a whole lot of other guitar players. He has been the engineer on a lot of recordings by incredible guitar players, and I'm lucky to get to work with him. He's sort of a New York guitar institution, and not just guitar, you know, he's done work for everyone, really. But I worked with him as a co-producer and engineer on that album, Ace, and it was his suggestion. He said, you know what, it's panning out to be such a sort of guitar-oriented album. What if you tackle a classic, like a guitar classic, but do it your way? And he suggested 'Cause We've Ended as Lovers, and I was hesitant at first because it's such a classic. I thought, I don't like covering ground that's already been so well covered. However, I thought, well, you know, why don't we just play it and see what happens? And I started off with I did a solo guitar version of it, which it was okay. You know, it would have been fine, but it didn't make me feel anything. It didn't move me. I sort of listened back to it and thought it's very sort of functional.
Mm-hmm.
It could exist or it could not exist, and I think the world would be fine either way. So
let's be honest.
Anyway,
okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So I just, but then what I did was with the band, I said, well, guys, let's just play a version of it. And let's just make it really raw. And I got a Les Paul. I picked up a Les Paul that I had with me and got in the room with the guitar, this little amp that was hand-built by Michael Perez Cisneros, actually. And we turned the amp up really loud so that it started sort of breaking up naturally, which is most of the tone you hear there, and I think. And started feeding back a bit. And I sort of just stopped caring in that moment and stopped second-guessing myself. And it just came out. And it came out kind of raw and honest, if you will. And I like that. It's I just thought, well, you know what? I don't even think of it as a cover song at that point. I just like the energy that we captured.
Yeah, I love the cover you did because, of course, we hear the theme and we recognize the song at once, but you take it to a complete different universe than what Jeff Beck did on this, and it is almost a surprise when you listen to the song, because you forget about the initial cover and say, oh my god, this is because we have ended as lovers. He's going back to the theme, and yeah, it's interesting to take us to this kind of a journey, you know, with that song. So congrats, it's good.
I'm glad you liked it. Thank you so much.
What about the guitar, the gear, the amp and pedal you used on the record? There is some great tones in there. There are some great
fantastic
tones.
Yeah. Thank you. Well, the amps were, at most times, except on that song where we just used one amp, they were sort of, the amps I used exclusively on that album were hand-built by Michael Perez Cisneros, and at most times we used two of them.
Okay.
Sort of a wet-dry kind of thing. You know, one amp is just the guitar signal, the other amp is a delay, essentially. And sometimes we deleted the second amp and, you know, added delay later, but sometimes we kept it just to have an option, you know.
And what about the gain? So all the gain we hear is coming from the amp, no overdrive or boost or stuff like that?
It is, sometimes it was just coming from the amp, like mm-hmm. on what we just discussed, but a lot of it is a blend of this pedal called the Tech 21 Oxford pedal,
mm-hmm.
Which is a drive, sort of an overdrive pedal, with a bit of an EQ. It's sort of a preamp pedal, if you will, and blended in with the natural overdrive of those amps that were custom built, little sort of tweed looking amps, you know. And yeah, that's it. And it was mostly a Strat, sometimes a Les Paul, and that was it. And we added some of the delay later. If not, it was a Keeley delay workstation pedal.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a lot of fun. And that was it. We did a bit of acoustic guitar. That was pretty straightforward. Just some overdubs here and there. It was mostly just the Strat, yeah.
Mm, yeah. And again, I have to congratulate you on releasing this album, because it's really fun to listen to, and there are a lot of different colors on it, so it's a great work.
Oh, thank you so much.
So we are in January, it is still very early in the year. I guess you don't have a lot of visibility on what are going to be the next project for you in 2021, but if you have a crystal ball, what do you want to achieve for this year?
Well, this year I want to, I'm sort of just writing a lot of music right now, and I'd like to put out some kind of new album of some sort, certainly record it this year, and get some people into the studio. I feel safe about it at this point, because in New York, New York was hit so hard by COVID that people have really sort of gotten used to the guidelines, wearing masks and all that kind of stuff. And I feel as though people have been really responsible with that in recent times here in New York, especially the people I know and would like to work with. So I'd like to get into the studio with some people and try some stuff out maybe a bit later in the year. And with a bit of luck, it might become another album. We'll see. But yeah. So I feel safe about going into the studio and doing that. And I need to play, man. I miss playing.
Mm-hmm. All right. Ben, it was great to be able to have you on the show. So thank you very much for your time. If people want to reach out to you, what's the best place they can find you, where they can find you on the internet?
You can go to my website, benjunsen.com. That's the number one best place. And then you can also, you can go to my YouTube channel,
okay,
which is the best place to sort of hear my longer music, you know. And there's also Instagram too, which is where a lot of people have discovered my music, and that's great too.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you very much again for your time, Ben, and hopefully next time we'll meet, it will be either when I am finally able to come back to New York, or when you come to play in Paris. Okay.
I would love it. I'd love it, Pierre. Thanks so much.
All right. Thank you very much. Bye bye.
Bye.
Amplify your passion for the guitar for a few dollars per month. Head over to theguitarchannel.biz.